Greetings. It's time for Native Sun, a show for Indigenous issues on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Your reader is Bethany Williams. My first story today comes from Native News Online and was written by Levi Reichert, published April the 13th, 2025. RFK Jr.'s Fireside Chat with Tribal Leaders. Tribal leaders from the Health and Human Services, or HHS, Secretary's Tribal Advisory Committee, STAC, joined HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. in a fireside chat during the Tribal Self-Governance Conference on Tuesday, held on the Gila River Indian Community Reservation near Phoenix. The fireside chat was part of Kennedy's Make America Healthy Again, MAHA, tour through the American Southwest. On stage with Secretary Kennedy were Chairman W. Ron Allen of the Jamestown Tsklallam Tribe, Chairwoman Cheryl Andrews Malteus of the Wampanoag Tribe of Gayhead, Aquinna, and Lieutenant Governor Chris Anoatabi of the Chickasaw Nation. Early in the nearly hour-long conversation, Kennedy spoke about the Kennedy family's longstanding commitment to Indian country. He noted that his father, the late Senator Robert F. Kennedy, Democrat of New York, was dedicated to improving the lives of Native Americans, a commitment he said he shares. He told the audience that on the night his father was assassinated in June 1968, Senator Kennedy was late delivering his victory speech in Los Angeles after winning the California primary because he had been on the phone with tribal leaders from South Dakota, where he had also won the primary that same day. Native News Online spoke with Allen and Andrews Malteus following the fireside chat. Both said Tuesday's event continued the positive dialogue that began during Kennedy's meeting with STAC members in Washington shortly after his Senate confirmation in February. Allen described the conversation as constructive, noting he reminded Kennedy that the Indian Health Service, IHS, remains underfunded and understaffed, and that tribes depend heavily on additional federal grants and programs. "We told him why self-governance works and how self-governance works," Allen said. "We discussed the importance of third-party revenue from Medicare, Medicaid, CHIP, and veterans programs. These are essential for making our clinics and hospitals successful. And we emphasize that it's not just about primary care or specialty care. It's also the other programs that have a significant impact on our work." Chairwoman Andrews Malteus said she attended the fireside chat with cautious optimism, recalling Kennedy's attentiveness and engagement during the February STAC meeting. "Not only did he get Indian country, he understood the difference between tribal sovereignty and DEI. He recognized that we have political standing and status that comes from treaty and trust responsibilities," she told Native News Online. "So we really didn't have to go through Indians 101 with him or his staff. They already knew it, which was very encouraging." During the fireside conversation, tribal leaders stressed to Kennedy that much of Indian country is located in rural areas. In some cases, they noted, IHS facilities are absent, and HHS clinics are the primary providers of care for Native Americans. Even before his confirmation, Kennedy had met with tribal leaders and committed to establishing a position similar to an assistant secretary focused on Indian country. He reaffirmed that commitment during the fireside chat. In addition to the Phoenix area event, Kennedy visited Utah, Arizona, and New Mexico on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday to observe firsthand how local and tribal leaders are advancing the MAHA agenda. "At every stop on this tour, I witnessed the impact of bold leadership, from state lawmakers to indigenous leaders standing up for the health of their communities and the future of their children," Kennedy said. "At HHS, we're committed to empowering these communities by supporting science-based policies, rebuilding trust in public health, and protecting future generations from harmful exposures. That's how we'll make America healthy again." Following the fireside chat, Kennedy visited an Indian Health Service clinic in the Phoenix metropolitan area that provides a range of services, including medical, behavioral health, dental care, and WIC support. That was RFK Jr.'s fireside chat with tribal leaders. Trump directive creates chaos on the Colorado River. This is by Daniel Herrera Carbajal, writing for ICT, published on the 17th of April, 2025. In March, Gila River took out 10,000 acre-feet of their allotted water from Lake Mead after the Trump administration's Unleashing American Energy executive order froze money for any program related to the Inflation Reduction Act. The act, which Congress passed during the Biden administration in 2022, allocated money for tribes and states in exchange for giving up some of their shares of Colorado River water. The Trump administration later unfroze the Inflation Reduction Act funds that would be used for water conservation projects and to build canals. The act allocated around $4 billion to compensate tribes, states, and other organizations to not take water out of the Colorado River, to use to generate revenue like crops. Gila River Governor Stephen Rowe Lewis wrote a letter to the Interior Secretary Doug Burgum on February 11th before removing Colorado River water from Lake Mead. "We've given the department every opportunity to avoid what could be a calamitous break in our long-standing partnership, with terrible consequences for the entire basin," he said. If water levels continue dropping, hydroelectric dams on the Colorado River will not be able to generate electricity. But the compensation to not take water out of the river has been seen as a short-term solution by many experts, including Mark Squillis, a professor of law at the University of Colorado Boulder who specializes in natural resource law. "My concern is that the Biden administration seemed to be focused on short-term buyouts of water consumption," he said. "I just don't think that kind of approach is sustainable. What we need on the Colorado River are permanent reductions in consumption. So spending a lot of money to temporarily buy out the rights of people to use all of their water, right, is just not something that's going to solve the problem." 30 tribes have rights to the Colorado River. The river is a resource, but for the Zuni Pueblo, it is the source of life. "For the Zuni people, the Colorado River is really important because the river and the Grand Canyon are our homeland. That's where the Zunis emerged," said Councilman of Zuni Pueblo, Edward Wemitua. "The Colorado River has important cultural significance to each tribe that has water rights to it. But the Colorado River Compact that outlined how the river would be divided was not drafted in consultation with tribes. Laws were created by the U.S. governments, by the U.S. agencies. During those times, the federal government, in the name of public interest, they started delineating territories. They started creating laws about water usage, water compacts," said Wemitua. "Well, in those earlier years, when the laws were being developed and implemented, the Zuni was not at the table. Many Native peoples weren't at the table. Under federal law, those tribes have the right to take their water, usually in priority over everybody else, because the date of priority for Indian water rights is the date of their reservations, which is typically within the 19th century," said Squillis. "So those water rights tend to date back before other non-Indian users. Those are legal rights that they're entitled to. So one of the things I've suggested in my article is maybe we should think about closing down the river to new appropriations. Why are we continuing to appropriate new water rights when we have this crisis and we have early water rights from Native American tribes that are currently legal but not being utilized for a number of different reasons," he said. The current compact being used was created in 1922, and it divided the river into two basins, upper and lower. Each basin was allotted no more than 7.5 million acre-feet of water per year, equaling 15 million acre-feet. Mexico was allocated 1.5 million acre-feet a year. The amount of water the river produces was vastly overestimated at the time of the compact's creation. At the time they negotiated the compact, it was thought there was maybe 18 million acre-feet of water on an annual basis in the river, which turned out not to be true, Squillis said. Currently, the Colorado River is producing about 12.5 million acre-feet a year. A vast over-allocation of water has led to states battling over water and how to use it. Squillis proposed a new Colorado River Compact. It proposes to update states' water usage laws and to bring tribal nations into the conversation. I've suggested that maybe we could come up with a new compact, which would look very different from the current compact, but would basically be an agreement among the states to modernize their water laws, he said. Right now, we have a number of principles in the various state water laws that I think allow for, I don't want to call them wasteful, but at least inefficient uses. We could increase our efficiency in terms of the amount of water we use if we sort of refined what we call beneficial use. There's a principle in Western water law, you only get as much water as can be beneficially used. For the Zuni Pueblo, a history of strong-handed negotiations and lack of knowledge of government systems that are not their own led to signing deals that did not benefit them. When there were any land settlements or water settlements, tribes were never provided with attorneys. Tribes were never given a heads up. They were never given funding to educate themselves as indigenous peoples, Wemitewa said. We are stewards of the water. We find the corn seed central. The corn seed is central. In fact, our abstract name is Children of Corn because we're farmers. We're agricultural people. What agricultural people would give up their water rights? What agricultural people would give up their watershed? We didn't have much choice. Tribes have priority over everyone else when it comes to their water rights pertaining to the Colorado River, which means they must have a voice in the conversation. There are 30 Native American tribes with water rights along the Colorado River, and it may be impractical to basically have all 30 tribes represented during negotiations. We've got 7 states, 2 countries, 30 tribes. That would be a very difficult kind of negotiation. But you could certainly have some representatives. The reason it's tricky is that not all tribes agree on the best approach here. And so it's important that we treat individual Native American tribes as people who can have their own views that might be different from other tribes. So how do you ensure fair representation of all the tribal views without actually putting all those tribes at the table during negotiation? For Wemitewa, a new compact with tribes involved is necessary. Today, as a tribal leader, I submit comments to federal agencies. Whether it's the National Park Service or the Bureau of Land Management or the U.S. Geological Survey, we submit our comments trying to provide guidance to the federal agencies that you have to consider that you can't continue to open up the lands. You cannot continue to give away water because by doing so, you continue to remove indigenous peoples from their aboriginal lands to make room for other people, other cultures. That was the article, Trump Directive Creates Chaos on the Colorado. You're listening to Native Sun on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds of Arizona has been providing the disabled with audio access to print information for over 45 years. Learn how you can support us at our website, sunsounds.org, where you can also listen to our live streams or find individual episodes on demand. You can also hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. From Source New Mexico, which is a sister paper to the AZ Mirror, Navajo advocates say Prez's approval of uranium transport and Trump coal order feels like a betrayal, by Patrick Lohman, published on April 21, 2025. Advocates from across the Navajo Nation gathered in front of the nation's council meeting hall in Window Rock, Arizona, on Monday, hoping to tell Navajo President Boone Nigrin how frustrated and disappointed they are by his abrupt endorsement of Donald Trump's executive order, aiming to reinvigorate the nation's coal industry. But Nigrin was in Washington, D.C. As part of his engagement with our federal partners, his office said on social media, so he couldn't address the Navajo Nation Council for its first meeting. That left advocates even more frustrated, they said, that they couldn't speak to Nigrin about their concerns. Advocates, in speeches Monday, pointed to the Nigrin administration's recent confidential agreement with uranium company Energy Fuels, which allows the company to transport uranium ore across the Navajo Nation for a price, and in exchange for the company's promise to clean up abandoned uranium mines across the Navajo Nation. Because of the late January agreement, several trucks carrying uranium ore and other material traverse the western side of the Navajo Nation most days, carrying the material from a mine near the Grand Canyon to a mill in Utah. The agreement would also apply to the eastern side of the Navajo Nation, which falls in New Mexico, if a proposed massive uranium mine near Mount Taylor is ever approved for operation. That project, called the Rocahonda Mine, is now a priority project at the Cibola National Forest, thanks to Trump's executive order, seeking to boost domestic energy production. In addition to the uranium transport agreement, advocates on Monday also noted that Nygren last week endorsed Trump's Reinvigorating America's Beautiful Clean Coal Industry executive order and took a selfie with him during the signing ceremony. A picture included with the article shows Cheyenne Antonio with Dene Care, C-A-R-E, at the rally on Monday, and there is a sign on their back, a pinned piece of cloth with stenciled on text, "No coal, no uranium, no new mining," and a skull in profile. Advocate Percy Deal spoke at the rally Monday in English and Navajo, saying Peabody Energy's coal mining operations beginning in the late 1960s have drained an untold amount of water from aquifer vital to his community on the Black Mesa Plateau in northeast Arizona for generations, plus contributed to climate change. So he was surprised and alarmed that Nygren, whom he called Hastin Bich'alishinigi in Navajo, or the man in the black hat in English, would endorse executive orders boosting coal production from Trump, Mr. Yellowhair, without consulting people like him who have been so harmed by coal extraction. All these things probably are now in the hands of Mr. Yellowhair. The sad thing is that Hastin Bich'alishinigi never spoke to any of us, never did, Deal told attendees. He's got a vehicle here furnished by the tribe. He could have gone out to, for example, the Black Mesa and talked to us. Nygren's spokesperson, Alistair Bitsoy, noted in an interview with Source New Mexico on Tuesday that uranium mining is still banned on the Navajo Nation and that cleanup efforts are ongoing. Bitsoy also deferred comment on the transport agreement to the Navajo Nation Department of Justice, which Bitsoy said was in charge of the nation's negotiations with Energy Fuels. Also, Nygren, in a letter published Monday on social media, defended his endorsement of Trump's energy executive orders. I accepted the invitation to the White House because the three executive orders that President Trump signed are intended to advocate America's dominance in energy, Nygren wrote. The Navajo Nation shares the goal of American energy dominance because the Navajo Nation has, for 100 years, been part of the energy framework of the United States. Our lands have natural resources and transmission lines, also known as the grid. We will forever be part of the American energy framework, and therefore Navajo's voice and involvement in these discussions is required, he wrote. Advocates said Nygren's latest endorsements are a stark contrast from language on his website listing his priorities for the environment, which begins by saying, "Mitigating the effects of climate change on Navajo land is our responsibility, and the Nygren administration will ensure Navajo community voices are empowered in protecting our water, air, and land." Larry J. King, who grew up in Church Rock, said at the rally, he once worked in uranium mines in New Mexico, and in 1979 he witnessed the United Nuclear spill there, the largest accidental release of radiation in United States history. He told Source New Mexico that Nygren, who took office in January of 2023, repeatedly promised during his election to clean up uranium mine waste from his community at Redwater Pond, but then ignored his calls. That's one reason King said he does not believe Nygren's promises that the new transport agreement will result in the cleanup of legacy uranium mines in areas like Redwater Pond. For one thing, he's skeptical of high-pressure slurry ablation, which Navajo Nation officials have touted as an emerging treatment method for the cleanup process. King noted that Nygren endorsed Kamala Harris and traveled with the Democratic delegation to the Democratic Convention last year. He said he sees Nygren's latest endorsements as a betrayal of his promises and his constituents. "He's just making a turnaround and in support of all this industry wanting to come and desecrate," he said. "A repeat of what we've been through, trying to remedy the situation, from the last 30 to 40 years. He's going back. That was Navajo advocates say Prez's approval of uranium transport and Trump coal order feels like a betrayal. Fort Lewis College appoints first Indigenous president. By Kali Benali of ICT, April 21, 2025. As one student put it, an auntie is going to guide Fort Lewis College toward the world we want to see after the college appointed its first Indigenous president. Heather Shotten, the incoming president, is tremendously honored. She was unanimously appointed on April 11th by the college's Board of Trustees. It's a truly powerful moment for me personally, and for my family and my community, and for the Fort Lewis College campus, for our students, and everyone who's connected to the college. We all recognize this is a historic moment, and truly is powerful to be a part of this, Shotten said, who is Wichita and affiliated tribes, and a Kiowa and Cheyenne descendant. Shotten was previously the vice president of diversity affairs at Fort Lewis College in Durango, Colorado for 3 years, and was the acting dean of student engagement in 2024. She said it provided her a unique perspective about the student body. So much of the role has been student-facing and focused on creating community and sense of belonging for our students here at Fort Lewis College so that they can be successful and that we can make sure they graduate and have a good experience here, she said. One of those students includes Brittany Bitzley, Dene, who served on the President's Search Committee as the student representative. Representation matters, and I can't think of a better example at this moment at FLC. Like many of my peers, I see myself in Dr. Shotten's incredible journey, Bitzley told ICT, who was also the first Indigenous woman to be president of the Associated Students of Fort Lewis College. Out of the entire student body population, Fort Lewis is home to 40% Native American and Alaska Native students. With the college's history as a former federal Indian boarding school, and now serves a large Native and Alaska Native student population, Indigenous leadership at Fort Lewis has been long overdue, Bitzley said. It feels especially fitting that a first-generation Indigenous matriarch, who's a powerhouse in academia and committed to community building, now holds this position, Bitzley said. Her love for the institution is palpable, and we're so thankful to have an auntie guide us toward the world we want to see. Multiple faculty and staff members are excited about the news. Carolina Alonso, an associate professor of Borders and Languages, said Shotten's appointment was met with applause. When I shared the news with my class, the students cheered. Shotten is visible, respected, and deeply involved. Representation matters, and her presidency sends a powerful message, Alonso said in a press release. The director of the Academic Hub, Michelle Bonanno, emphasized Shotten's inclusive efforts. As one of the preeminent scholars on Native student success, she's the right leader for our academic mission and our future. She's built initiatives that support first-generation students, LGBTQ+ students, and students from rural backgrounds. Her approach is always grounded in relationships and centered on student success, Bonanno said. Shotten's connection to Fort Lewis is also through her daughter, who graduated last May, and her work with Native education and advocacy work. Shotten previously held leadership roles at small liberal arts colleges and large public research universities. She was the previous chair of the Department of Educational Leadership and Policy Studies at the University of Oklahoma and board president of the National Indian Education Association. Shotten earned 3 degrees from the University of Oklahoma, a bachelor's in Native American Studies, a master's in Human Relations, and a doctorate in Educational Leadership and Policy Studies. Fort Lewis's early history includes being a military fort for 11 years and was then turned into a federal Indian boarding school from 1892 to 1909. It was originally built in Hesperus, Colorado, 16 miles southwest of Durango. Now the area is used for the college's farmer training programs. Shotten said Fort Lewis is committed to reconciliation with that part of the college's history through co-curricular engagement and healing and wellness for students. It's one of their five strategic directions: reconciliation, academics, student-ready basic needs, and community connections. That's laid out in their 2025 through 30 strategic plan from the conversations they had on campus and input from tribal partners. I'm really excited for us to begin that as we move forward, Schotten said. Fort Lewis is also confident in their compliance with current federal and state legislation. The college provides a tuition waiver for Indigenous students. We feel confident in the foundation that stands on. That is related to the founding of this institution and an agreement between the federal government and the state of Colorado, and the original transfer of the land that created Fort Lewis College, Schotten said. She added, they are remaining focused on serving the diverse student population. As a Native American serving a non-tribal institution, we recognize we serve a unique student population, and beyond that, beyond being a Native-serving institution, 42% of our students are first-generation college students, 16% of our students are Latino students, and 40% of our students are Native American students, she said. Schotten said she hopes people who are like her, first-generation, Indigenous, who come from a rural community, will see themselves reflected in leadership. Hopefully, to imagine new possibilities for themselves, and that this is truly a full-circle moment for Fort Lewis College, given our history and our beginnings, she said. I'm just really proud and honored to get to lead alongside such amazing people here at Fort Lewis College, in a community that is so invested and dedicated to its students. Schotten will officially assume the presidency on July 1st. And that was Fort Lewis College appoints first Indigenous president. This has been Native Sun, bringing you news of Indian country on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Your reader is Bethany Williams. Music is Indomitable by DJ Shove.